The CIS critical security controls provide a prioritized path to improve an enterprise's cybersecurity posture. Version 8 includes some exciting updates to keep up with the ever-changing cyber ecosystem. The CIS controls are now task-focused and combined by activities rather than by who manages the devices, decreasing the number of CIS controls from 20 to 18. The 18 controls contain 153 safeguards, which you formerly knew as subcontrols. Safeguards are still prioritized into implementation groups, or IGs, with IG1 defining essential cyber hygiene. The updated CIS controls point to existing standards and recommendations, along with V8, supporting information, products, and services are updated and available to help you with implementation. Learn more about CIS controls version 8 by visiting CISECURITY.org/controls.
Barcode Podcast with your host, Chris Glandon, serving cybersecurity straight up with no chaser. Let's hit the bar and grab a drink.
Okay, Tony. Yeah. I'll be there in like 10 minutes. I just got an alert that my self-driving Uber is about to pull up. All right, later. Holy shit.
Hello, Chris. Welcome to KIT, Knight Industries 2022. I'll be transporting you to my number one personal destination, Barcode.
This is unreal. I mean, I used to idolize you. And if I want to place my trust in a self-driving car, it's got to be the one and only KIT.
Thank you, Chris. My code has since been altered, and now I am more accurate, faster, and intelligent. Most importantly, more secure. Your voice command input is encrypted, so our communication is practically unhackable.
I love it. Well, Kit, I'm up here at the end of the street.
Thanks, although that information is already stored within my databank. Please tell Tony hello for me.
Will do. Thanks, Kit.
Hey, Chris, damn, that was fast.
Yo, Kit Uber just dropped me off.
Oh, yeah, I know, Kit. I hit him up when I don't feel like taking out the Ferrari. Kit is the most secure self-driving car you can get, bro.
Well, I need a drink, bro. What you got for me?
I got the perfect drink. It'll get you nice and tuned up. We call it the VTEC Punch. You're going to fill your glass with ice cubes and pour bourbon over it. Your favorite bourbon. I had lemon juice, simple syrup, and egg white. Take a sip, wait for the kick. Performance optimized.
Thanks, brother. Hey, I just saw an expert on car hacking walk through the door. I'll hit you up later when I'm on E.
You got it, Chris. I'll see you next round.
Robert Lealy is the president of CAN Bus Hack, president of Pivot, and is also founder of Car Hacking Village, which can be seen at DEF CON, DerbyCon, GERCON, CypherCon, DotCon, and many more hacking conferences across the globe. Robert, thanks for joining me at Barcode, man. It's an honor to have you on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I must note that we are doing this interview, or you are doing this interview in a car, so it's even more fitting.
The situation sort of presents itself that the only place that I can do it quietly enough is in a car. So,
no, man, I wouldn't have it any other way. So
it sort of is legit, though, so it makes sense.
Right. If you don't mind, can you walk me through, you know, your journey, or rather drive me through your journey of getting into the IT/security field, and then ultimately, you know, how you ended up in the car hacking realm.
Yeah, so I mean, car hacking has sort of been a thing that I've been doing since I was, you know, since I got my first car, you know, back when I was 16. Was I was really interested in how it works, just like a lot of us hackers out there, really interested in how does this thing work? How can I hack it? Right. And so one of my first vehicles that I owned was a 96 Honda Civic that I got when I was in high school. And I was just really interested in how we can connect to it. I had seen at the time, you know, people tuning them. Like, you know, a video of people tuning them. I was like, well, I know we can connect to it. There's some way that it can happen. And, you know, 96 was a long time ago. I don't know if you remember the internet back then. It wasn't very useful at all. Pretty useless by today's standards. So it really wasn't very helpful. But there was a couple of good websites and forums to figure out how to connect to vehicles. And so I just sort of did what I could with the computer parts that I had and put a computer in the vehicle and, you know, added a nav system and as much as I could to just try to, you know, connect the computer and the nav system together and, you know, video and audio and just generally just interested in how I could put a computer and integrate it as much as possible in vehicle. So that's kind of how I started. Fast forward to like maybe about 7 or 8 years later, I found myself at a company that specialized in vehicle network tools in Detroit. So kind of in the center of, you know, cars, kind of in the center of electronics and integration and vehicles. And I really loved it. And soon after, in 2010, I started CAN Bus Hack. At that point, I'd done a lot of work with integrating electronics into vehicles, you know, just myself as a hobby and then professionally. And then now that's essentially what we do. And I really, you know, was always interested in going to DEF CON, ever since I first heard about it probably in the late 90s, early aughts. And when I finally got a chance to go, got the money up and I was able to, you know, fly myself out to Vegas, I was just blown away by DEF CON. And so I really wanted to, you know, sort of contribute just like everybody else was making these villages and things like that. And I asked them, hey, can I make a village? I had no idea how to do one. You know, I never consulted a single person running a village on how to run a village. So I just kind of winged it, you know. We just got a bunch of, you know, other car hackers that I'd worked with in the past and companies that had helped me out and worked with me. And I trained people on and said, hey, you guys want to make a go of it, want to do this car hacking village? And they said, sure, let's do it. And I got some really cool support from somebody named Kirsten who really helped out, and a bunch of other people who just sort of were really, really pivotal in making the village, you know, kind of what it is today. And just this crazy, you know, mix of hackers and, you know, and other people in the InfoSec place. That was really fun. So it's kind of a long story because it's, you know, kind of a 20-year journey, you know, but here we are.
Yeah. No, man, you took me through that at warp speed. So I appreciate it. And yeah, I was at DEF CON this year, and yeah, Car Hacking Village is just always phenomenal. I really enjoy it.
It's hard. I'm sure all the villages work really hard, but you know, car hacking is one of those things that really can bring in a lot of different, kind of, you know, hackers, you know, like a really good friend of mine says it's like the Olympics of hacking, right? Because it really has all of the other things. We make a Venn diagram and then of like IoT hacking, wireless hacking, you know, you name it, like, you know, hardware hacking, and you look at it, car hacking kind of just sits right in the middle of all of those. It can kind of encapsulate all of them. Now we kind of specialize in that, what makes cars unique, like what's kind of on the outside of that Venn diagram is kind of where we try to live in the car hacking village, but we don't have to, right? Like it's just fun to be on the outside because that's what makes it the more unique aspect. So that we focus on that spot that's kind of underserved by other villages maybe. But there's a lot of places that it kind of fits. And so it just kind of can bring a lot of people together. Plus people love cars, right? Like it doesn't even have to be a car hacker that goes and does this. So, So we're working really hard on trying to get like other things as well inside of the village. You know, we've always tried to get bigger things. Sometimes, last year, you know, during, you know, when it was kind of like half DEF CON, you know, it wasn't a full off DEF CON. We tried to get a John Deere combine, but the dimensions wouldn't fit in the facility, so we couldn't fit it in there. So we're like, well, that's our limitation. If we want to, hack a big combine, we got to have a bigger place. And so, you know, our goal this year or for next year actually is to get large semi trucks. We have somebody who wants to give us some semi trucks to hack on, so we're excited about that too. So that'd be fun.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So that is an interesting transition that you made from, you know, hobby to career.
Yeah.
And you started out with the 96 Civic. When you talk about, you know, the car that you had this year, was it a Tesla?
So we had a Tesla, and we had of course, as you may have heard, the Hondas got really beat up over this last year. Yes. If you were outsider looking in, you're just like, oh, these are random cars that we're putting inside the village, but it's never a random car. Every year there's some sort of manufacturer that kind of gets owned in some way that has some CVE, there's some big story that kind of hits them. And that's the car we target to bring in to the village. Right.
Okay.
Whatever was like the big one through the year. And like last year was Honda, right? Our first DEF CON was the Jeep hack. Right. So you'll notice our first DEF CON, there was a Jeep. And since last one, no different. Like the Honda had a CVE against like the wireless system and how anybody could really just like clone it. And a bunch of people had like, if you got one of those flipper zeros, you could just literally copy the key from somebody just pressing the key fob and then change the data and send it back out without really any hacking. It's just like, by the way, if you want to steal somebody's key, you can, no problem. And that's the reason why we do that. It's like, hey, let's sort of emphasize there's cars are still very hackable today, as just like they were last time. But yeah, we did have a Tesla as well. There's a lot of people like to play on the Tesla. Actually, there's some really interesting things that people were doing with the Tesla as we were closing up and I was helping them out with. It was just, there's some fun. There's still a lot of fun to be had with Tesla regardless.
Yeah. And I need to get my hands on a Flipper Zero.
Oh yeah. My gosh. Yeah. They're stuck. Good luck.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that.
So Tesla, you can open up the Tesla charge port with the RF and you can clone and copy Honda key fobs that I'm aware of. And there's a couple other things that I've seen people do with NFC hotel room. I saw on the Twitter somebody doing some cool like cloning NFC card for hotel rooms. So yeah, it's got some features that you can use. You know,
nice.
Not as good as like a Proxmark for like RF cloning.
Okay.
You know, it's not nearly as good, I should say, but it's very good for a lot of other, like if you want to roll everything into one and maybe make a multi-tool for hacking, it's very good.
Got it. So you had the Honda there at Car Hacking Village. In general, do you target certain types of vehicles or manufacturers? And, you know, what do you look for in terms of targeting a vehicle to hack? Is it only vehicles that you know are vulnerable when you seek them out, or do you also, you know, test against other vehicles as well that may be more secure?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can just smell them. You can just smell a hackable car. I don't know why. It's funny, you know, when the Jeep hack came out back when, you know, if you're not familiar with like the Jeep hack, there was a massive hack, remote hack that happened with Jeep. And our first, during the first DEF CON, like, you know, if you looked at the time, it was owned, Jeep was owned by a company called FCA at the time. And FCA stock actually took like a 10% dip after they posted it. So, you know what I mean? Like there's definitely implications. And I actually owned a Jeep at the time. Right. And there wasn't a coincidence. I owned a Jeep when the Jeep hack happened, because it was a very hackable car. Right. And you could just smell it. That's the reason why I got it. It's like, oh man, look at all the things you can do on this one. There's got bound to be something, right? It just, you could just see like, hey, it's got wireless, it's connected to the internet. It's got multiple CAN buses connected to really interesting interfaces, et cetera, et cetera. So you could just kind of smell just like the probability of a hack is much higher for these. And that's kind of what people do with the Tesla. Actually, I own a Tesla right now as well. Because, you know, there's just a lot of just probability. It's all about probability. So it's a much higher probability of success that this Jeep is going to be capable of being hacked, I guess. You just look at all of the attack surface and you just kind of make a determination. It's got wireless, it's got Bluetooth, it's got new things that nobody's ever done before, like autonomous driving, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, if nobody's ever done it before, if it's so cutting edge, bleeding edge, there's no way they knew how to secure it because they didn't even know what they had at the time, right? So you just kind of know that it's going to be fun. You're going to find something for sure.
Yeah. Was that Jeep, I guess, the most hackable vehicle that you've seen?
At the time, it was probably the most interesting, available, cost-effective hackable vehicle, right? Like you're not going to go out and buy a Lamborghini just to hack it. And that's kind of why Lamborghinis are pretty safe, right, in that sense. But Lamborghini is owned by FCA, right? So if you hack the Jeep, maybe they have some, say, similar electrical architecture and be able to succeed on it. So,
what vehicle have you found to be the most secure?
Well, honestly, I think Tesla does a great job, for sure. Like, as far as secure, like actively working on security, I would still recommend the Tesla in that sense.
Okay.
Because you get updates, right? Like, if the Jeep hack had an update, but the update that it had was, it took them a very long time for them to have that update distributed because you had to get a USB stick, you had to choose to plug it in. And it took, 30, 40 minutes for that to happen. And most people didn't even know how to read the instructions or where to plug it in. Whereas with the Tesla, you just hit the button on the display. It's like, I want to update. Sure, no problem. And it just does it. So, if a problem is found, you can't assume that problems won't be found. But when they're found, they actually do something about it and then had a means in which to distribute it, right? So that's kind of why I like the Tesla. And during like virtual DEF CON, I even like took like a Raspberry Pi and plugged it into my car and let people remotely over the internet at like Pancakes Con and at DEF CON and one of the Grim Cons as well, just like plug in and let them wirelessly connect to my vehicle's network and send, whatever they wanted, random anonymous internet people. And I drove it afterwards, So I didn't feel, although I was watching what they were doing, like in case I saw this like weird payload of like a bunch of data where they're reflashing a controller. First of all, that would have been awesome because now they just shared how they reflashed a controller with me, idiots. But also if they reflashed a controller, I would have seen it as well. So,
right. Yeah. No, it's good to hear that Tesla is security conscious.
Yeah.
And then that'll be reassuring when I ultimately get my Cybertruck.
Yes, I'm still waiting too, man. I pre-ordered mine. I don't know, 10 years ago, whenever he decided to come out with it. So yeah,
I would like to get one of those in DEF CON when that happens. So for the manufacturers that are making these intensely connected vehicles, right? What are they missing, as they are planning and developing these electronic systems for vehicles? And do you feel like we should be implementing a dedicated security team within the manufacturer?
It's so weird. So several, all the large ones, if you're, especially ones in the US and external, they have security teams for sure. Like, they're sometimes reliant on, external security companies as well. But, they have security teams and they, you might not notice them, which is good. You shouldn't notice them. But, actually this last DEF CON, we had our CTF and the security team that won was actually General Motors security team. So GM won our last year's CTF. So yeah, we'll get a lot of, we've had other manufacturer security teams compete and our CTF. So it's so we get to meet them and other events as well. So we know they exist. Sometimes they're not as big as maybe you would anticipate. You know, like you'd think like a multi-billion dollar company would have a security team larger than, you know, 40 or 50 people. Just, you know, you'd want it to be like maybe a several hundred people at least. That are just verifying all of the lines of code, especially the new code that's being written out there. The biggest challenge, honestly, that manufacturers have with securing their own systems is that they don't make it, right? It says GM on the badge, but, you know, not all of the electronics, but a significant portion of electronic systems are not made by that manufacturer. They're made by another one. So how big are their security teams, right? If at all, do they have one? You know, a lot of the manufacturers require them to, but maybe they're not that good, you know? So it's really hard to, even the manufacturer who's ultimately auditing all that information, it's really hard for them to verify it. And then again, it goes back to that big problem. If the problem exists in code that's not yours, how do you fix it? How do you deploy it, et cetera? Tesla got around this by just not having anybody else make their electronics, right? They just vertically integrated everything. But that's not really the model that does really well in automotive. They can't do that. Back in the 1900s, the early 1900s, sure, that was a very obvious model. Ford used to do that as well. They should integrate everything. But they had to get away from it ultimately because as soon as some problem happens, you know, with rubber production and you can't get rubber for tires, you got to find somebody else to get it. Same thing for silicon and electronics and things like that. And who's making most of the innovation are a lot of these suppliers, and the manufacturer doesn't even know how to build a windshield wiper. You know what I mean? They don't, you know, there's plenty of windshield wiper suppliers. They do it. The manufacturer doesn't care about how windshield wipers work. They just know how to integrate it. And so they're big integration companies mostly. And, yeah, sure. Nowadays, in order for them to stay competitive, they've had to bring a lot of their development in-house. But that's only a recent trend, maybe in the past 10 years or so, that they're bringing a lot more electronic development in-house. So we'll see how it ultimately susses out. But I anticipate that, you know, it's just there's got to be a lot of teams of cybersecurity companies that are involved in the entire process. And it takes a long time, and once something is found, how do you distribute it? So a lot of these companies are working on over the air updates similar to Tesla as well.
Okay. Yeah, it's supply chain, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all dealing with supply chain.
Yeah, exactly. Threats. And it was cars that caused the whole supply chain problem in the beginning because they canceled all of their orders and they made a mistake. Oh shoot, we shouldn't have canceled that. Can we have all that time back that we sold off on your fabs and stuff? And they're like, oh yeah, sure, that'll just cost you three times as much because we shut them all down. So
yeah,
I know, it's a big problem.
Is there any way you could talk us through sort of high level, like what that computer architecture looks like within a vehicle and like what tech within that vehicle is particularly vulnerable?
Yeah. So, I mean, when we talk about electronics in vehicles, we're kind of there's a lot of external interfaces, usually RF, right? So we have RF that's cellular, we have RF. Bluetooth is becoming very popular as a key fob now. Like, you know, Bluetooth, your phone is a key. So Bluetooth, we have regular key fob like RF communications that have been around for a long time. Not just key fob RF, but your tire pressure monitoring also uses RF as well. It's much lower on the security challenge side, but it's still there's some RF involved as well. So between all of those, you know, we talk about, you know, like obviously if I walk up to a car and I can unlock it, that sucks for that car. But the manufacturer looks at it and says, well, what's the problem, right? Like, okay, so your stuff got stolen out. But if somebody broke your window, the same thing would happen. So what are we really trying to secure here? What the manufacturers are really, really interested in is now they're trying to connect all these systems to the internet, right? And now they're all connecting back to their back-end servers. And they would be very disappointed if somebody were able to get access to their back-end server and, you know, maybe update a patch, you know, send a patch out to these vehicles to have them, you know, controllable remote. Now,
and when you say it goes back to the internet, can you just talk a little bit about like what type of data is getting sent back, and is that data encrypted? Like, how is that data protected?
Short answer, it used to not be. It was interesting. One of the first ones that we looked at, I can't say who it was, obviously, but obviously it's still around. You know, these cars, 10 years later, you know, I could have looked at it 5 years ago and it was brand new. It's still on the road today, right? So that's a big challenge about talking about certain things in vehicles. We did an assessment on a vehicle, and we noticed that the backend connection, the only security they really used was the fact that they didn't connect to the normal to your normal network. So I don't know if you're familiar with cellulars, but they have these things, cellular networks, but they call this thing called APNs. Not really sure, to be honest with you, what that means off the top of my head, but it's the network that it connects to, right? And okay. If you're not on the same network, obviously you can't traverse into their network, right? So if you get an IP address, you know, a 10.0 IP address from Sprint because you use their APN, or Verizon use their APN, you can't get to Sprint's APN, right? You can't get over to their network because it's a totally different network. Even though you might be using the exact same tower, everything is the same, you can't traverse over to their network because it's physically separate or virtually separate, at least, network. And so this other manufacturer used a completely separate APN that wasn't, you know, Sprint or Verizon. It was like some other, it happened to be a satellite phone system, like, but they had ground-based stations, you know, like they could use like regular GSM traffic as well, and it was using their APN. It's like, oh, okay, so that means I couldn't send a text message. I couldn't, you know, which is actually how you could send. You could actually unlock all the doors and do some really interesting things on it. So you weren't able to do that, but you were able, nor were you able to traverse over and talk directly to the system. But that being said, if you were in one of the vehicles, or you stole one of these SIM cards out of one of the vehicles, which was, you know, a lot at the time, some of the vehicles still had SIM cards. Now they use a lot of eSIMs, so you can't really pull the SIM cards out. But one of them, we could pull the SIM card out, and then we could then use have a cell phone, get on that network, and then hotspot that cell phone. Now all of a sudden we're on that network. So that was their only security. Then we were able to talk to their controllers, right? Like, we were able to ping them, like, to the extent we were able to log into them and get them to talk directly to them. We weren't able to do that. It looked like they just sent data up to a particular server. So they weren't actively, like, you weren't able to like log in. There didn't seem to be an SSH or anything like that, but I'm sure there was some way for them to signal and open up ports, but we didn't have time to do that. There was a way for these systems to essentially unencrypted talk to these back-end servers, and, you know, to the extent that it probably still exists today, you know, that's why we don't talk too much about it, but, you know, these are the things that were happening in the very beginning of them connecting these systems to the network. Since then, we've seen other manufacturers, you know, they're putting, you know, certificates in the devices, verifying not only, you know, mutual authentication, if they talk to the back-end service, it's mutually authenticated. Now they're even using hardware-based certificates, so that the certificate isn't like just a file on a hard drive that you can pull off and change out. It lives inside of a hardware secure module, so which are very, very secure. You know, that's what you want them to do. If they're doing that, then they're doing a good job. But how do you know as a consumer what everybody is doing? And I think the short answer is like, kind of look. Again, as a car hacker, I could have told you, based off the security posture of one manufacturer before I even looked at them, like, this security posture of this manufacturer is much better than the security posture of this other manufacturer. Like, one of the first things you might do is just like, hey, tell this manufacturer, I have a new security bug. Who do I report this to? And if they tell you, just call our customer service reps up and they'll handle it for you. Don't go near that car, right? If they say, oh, yeah, use this email address, this is our security team, we'll look into it, you can almost know right away, you know, you got yourself somebody, you know, a company that's actually focused on security and maybe can handle it, you know. So that's kind of a, you know, it's not everybody can do that. A while ago, back when the GPAC happened, there was a proposition to like create a certification board that sort of certifies, you know, 5-star cybersecurity for this manufacturer. But, you know, that kind of legislation never gets pushed through. So it never happened. So,
yeah. Yeah. Very interesting, man. So now you mentioned like the certs embedded within the device, you have the hardware certs now. So it sounds to me like it's almost impossible to either, you know, sniff traffic, or even if you're physically connected, be able to capture traffic and be able to read it.
That's correct. Yeah. That's the idea. Is they make it so that any of that data that's going up to their backend servers is hopefully uncapturable. And the biggest problem that we used to do is, like I said, I could just pull the SIM card and be on the network, right? You should be authenticated. And so it should be a mutual authentication that my hardware I couldn't fake a car. Like, that's the other direction that we had fun with, is like, hey, can I pretend to be the car that I just pulled the SIM out of? Usually the answer is yes, right? They might just go off of like the SIM IMEI or something like that. Or some sort of like unique identifier that's based off that SIM, and say, oh yeah, sure, that car is totally allowed to do that. However, can I be like 10 other cars? Can I flood their backend system with so many alerts and so many notifications that it fails, right? Like if I can make it so their backend system fails, that'd be bad. In fact, if you look at Tesla, I don't know if they had this happen. They wouldn't say that they did, but if their backend system stops working, people can't unlock the doors or can't use their phone as a key anymore. This happened when they had a system-wide outage a few years ago. For some short period of time, maybe a couple hours, it was probably some internal, you know, it's always usually an intern, probably hits the wrong button kind of thing. But for a few hours, I couldn't use my phone as a key. You try to start the car, it wouldn't work. You had to use your physical... They give you a physical card as a backup just in case that system fails or for whatever reason, but like an NFC card. You know, if I was able to like simulate a bunch of vehicles and go after their backend system, you know, that's probably the juiciest target that they should be, you know, holding up, is, you know, like putting the most security on. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people working on that, you know, securing those systems, but those systems are definitely the ones that a lot of people are going after nowadays, are the backend systems, the APIs, the systems where that the cars are connecting to, and that the apps are connecting to. Those seem to be probably the most interesting for more car hackers, even though it's not car hacking, right? Like, we could easily say, like, again, that Venn diagram of car hacking, where does it live? You know, backend systems are clearly not cars, right? You can't drive them around, but... Right. You can open up other people, you know, you can open up cars. They're just, you know, cars are now IoT devices. You can just connect to them over the internet. And, you know, heck, I can drive my car from my app on my phone. I can move it around, right? Like, that Tesla has a summons feature and I can have it drive itself up to me. So you can drive cars with, if you could get a hold of that backend system, you can make everybody's Tesla move backwards, you know, if you wanted to. Yeah, I imagine that's a lot more complicated than I'm making it out to be. I'm hoping that it is, but I don't know that it is. I don't know. I haven't had fun with that particular system, so I don't know.
Do cars still use OnStar?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. OnStar is like mandatory. 2009 and newer vehicles very much use OnStar. In fact, I know somebody who's worked on OnStar, you know, and part of the OnStar team, like to build and develop the hardware that OnStar is. And that is a massive team. Like, there are a lot of people. There are more people building OnStar than securing, you know, cars. Let me just say that right now. And to the extent that their work, you know, like the cybersecurity posture of OnStar, I was always really impressed with it. You know, one of the first things that I did when I owned a GM vehicle for a long time, which is OnStar. You know, all GM vehicles have OnStar. And one of the fun things that I used to like to do was like reprogram the phone number that when you hit the button, on the OnStar, is like reprogram the phone number that it dialed back to, right? And you could have it dial your friends, and then you didn't have to pay, you know, for OnStar. It was just a fun, simple hack, right? Because it's just the phone number is just simply stored in what's called a DID, a data identifier, and you could just write those things. Well, you couldn't, I don't recall if you could write that one without, you know, a security, if there was any security to write or not, but I don't recall there being a lot of security, if any. So you could just rewrite the phone number that he dialed back to and just like hit when you hit the button. And you get all three of them were just essentially like, they're like speed dial buttons. That's all they were, right? When you hit a button, when you hit the call button, when you hit the 909, you know, the emergency button, it was just like a speed button to call 911 or a speed button to call emergency services or whatever.
Okay.
You could just like reprogram it. Like you have three different buttons that you could say, I want to call my wife. I want to call my kid, you know, whatever you want. And then just dial it instead. And it was a very simple hack, you know, ultimately. So I don't know if it still is, probably is. I can't imagine it changed too much there. But yeah, so a lot of cars still use OnStar. One of the first really interesting hacks was related to OnStar. If you ever look up University of Washington, Carl Kosher did some papers related to hacking OnStar. This was back in, this is like 10 years ago, almost 8-10 years ago. So probably longer, actually probably 12 years ago now. So yeah, but that was one of the older OnStar systems. I'm sure they've fixed a lot of that. I haven't tested it, but.
Do you know if that was an OnStar to OnStar direct line of communication bypassing the manufacturer?
There are many companies involved in OnStar, right? OnStar, the company, and then they're like a tier one supplier. And then they have tier two suppliers, which are their hardware, the company that makes their hardware. They have tier three suppliers that the hardware supplies that are making the software. And they those tier three suppliers probably have tier four suppliers that handle most of like the integration and cellular aspects and hard other hardware integrations and things like that. So it gets really, really complicated real quick from just one module, right? Just the OnStar itself, you know, and there's hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, involved in just developing that one module. But that module is going to go in every GM vehicle around the world for years, for decades, that's been in every vehicle. So they put a lot of time and effort into the functionality and making sure that it works. And they also have to work on putting a lot of effort in this cybersecurity as well.
Yeah. Getting back to the traffic, right? The traffic that is going from the vehicle to the manufacturer.
Yeah.
And I assume this could differ depending on who the manufacturer is, but sure. What are they sending? Are they sending like GPS coordinates? Yeah. Are they sending your speed? Yeah. Are they sending like the music you're listening to? Like how granular does that data get?
That's a great question. I mean, I can't speak for everyone. To the extent that I even know the answer to this question, you know, it isn't, I'll tell you what they can send. They can send whatever they want, right? Literally whatever they want. That being said, I've done some work in this space as far as the privacy implications of this. And if you read your terms of service, if you know, when you get one of these vehicles, an OnStar, one with OnStar, one with, you know, a Tesla, I have a Tesla. If you read the terms of service, which of course I did, because I'm one of those people who want to know, like, are they going to sue me for hacking it? Because I always read it, like, you have to. And sometimes the answer is yes, they're going to sue you for hacking it. So, you know, so I don't talk about those ones. But if you read the terms of service, they'll tell you, not necessarily exactly what data they're collecting, but generally a good idea. And I actually did a project with somebody to verify that they actually were doing what they said. And the good news is it seems like that's the case, at least with the two or three that we tested. So, because we were really interested, obviously there is obviously, you know, if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, if they're taking more data, or they're collecting data when they're not supposed to, or when you explicitly did not give them permission, you opted out of that, and they still are collecting data, that would be a big problem, right? And, you know, there's a lot of people who would be very angry with you, you know, if you did that. So, you know, and to the extent that you can test it, it's pretty simple, right? Like if they're collecting data or not, if the pipe is on or off, you could just test the power on the module to see if there's power going to the radio, you know, front end. And if it's shut off completely, you're pretty sure that it's not. It's not working, or you can test the RF emissions from the radio, etc. There's really no limit. Like those modules are on all of the networks, so they can listen to any bit of data that's being streamed over it, and just like passively, like I wouldn't even know. Like as a car hacker, it's like they're passively. If those modules are passively listening, and then just compile a report and then send that data up, well, they did. You know, I didn't get to see it because it was all, they probably encrypted it, sent it to a server that I don't own, right? So I can't even spy on that data. So yeah, it's not simple. It's not easy to see it. To the extent that I have the data that I have seen, it's exactly what you think it is, right? It's like, it's drivability information. It's, you know, it's where the vehicle lives. And to the extent that you can actually find it on an app, right? Like if you have an OnStar app, you can see where your car is, how fast it's going, right? So you know that they're collecting that information, at least that data.
Yeah.
Are they collecting more than that? Yeah, of course, right? Like they're really interested in not who you are and what you are doing necessarily, unless you buy their, like OnStar offers insurance, right? There's OnStar insurance, so you can insure your vehicle through their insurance. And yeah. their insurance is very interested in how you drive because, you know, they want to know if you're a bad driver, really, like compared to the rest of the drivers that they insure and how much that costs them. You're in this bucket, right? Like you drive this way. But, you know, they're also really interested in these manufacturers are really, really, really interested in that data because and somebody else told me this actually from OnStar, like a person from OnStar said to me, like, listen, we had this one person who used to hit the gas pedal like this and then like this. They had two modes with the gas pedal, like down or up. And like, how do you write software to handle that, right? Like there are people who drive crazy. So they're really looking for these outliers that drive for the drivability. Now, to the extent that they could trace that back to the person who did the original, I'm sure they have the ability to do that. They would say that they anonymized that information, but everybody knows that anonymous information can really be used against them. So yeah, there's a lot of challenges with that. But he was like, you know, we get these reports that let us know how bad the drivers are. Like, look at these outliers. We have to program cars that work for them because they're on the road too, right? So it sounds really nefarious. Like, why would they need all this really highly detailed drive information? But the answer is really simple. If they don't have it, it could actually kill people, right? Because this person's bad driving could ultimately lead to like the failure of the vehicle, maybe failure of brakes. Maybe they're doing the same thing to the brakes as they are to the, so they need to be able to, to solve those problems. And to the extent that they actually adhere to the privacy policy, at least since I've been testing them, they have succeeded in doing so. So if they say they are not tracking you, I have not seen any evidence to suggest that they are. They do turn those systems completely off and make it very challenging for them to turn back on.
Yeah.
But they certainly could track you if they wanted to. And I sort of complain about this, and I added Elon Musk on Twitter because, like, I bought full self-driving for my car, and I bought it, you know, 3 years ago, and they're still in beta, right? They're super beta, full self-driving. And I can't get access to it because I won't sign the, like, what I would call a super draconian, like, they get to track you, they get to look at your cameras, they get to see everything about how you drive. I bought this system. I know it's still in beta, and I know it's going to be in perpetual beta for the rest of its existence, right? But yeah, at some point, you got to let me, you know, this person who bought it 3 years ago, get access to it, and it's still waiting. Because I want to hack it, right? I want to, you know, hackers have a mindset of like, hey, like, how do we, like, we don't want to be tracked and know everything known about us. So I turn off all of those, because in your Tesla, you could go in and turn off all of those things. No, you can't see my driving. No, you can't see my cameras. No, you can't do any of this stuff. I don't want that. But at the same time, you have to do it if you want to have the full self-driving. So how can I, as a independent researcher, you know, test these features? And I can't, the short answer, I can't. And so I don't know, you know, if full self-driving is really getting the attention that it deserves from, you know, car hackers, because the policy that they have is just so challenging for anybody in this space to really say yes to. Because, you know, like I drive my car into my garage. My garage is full of, you know, cars that are we can't talk about, right? Like we're not talking about this car or that car. So I can't bring my video cameras into my my garage and let people let Tesla know. You know, in theory, I'm giving them full permission to look at what's inside of my garage, and I don't want that. So it's a big challenge. you know, if you really look at it, it's at it from my perspective, it really makes it very challenging for us.
Yeah. So during DEF CON in Vegas, I Uber everywhere.
Yeah.
And Uber and Lyft obviously are rolling out these self-driving vehicles as well.
Yes.
Have you had a chance to really look into that? Do you have any concerns there, or do you feel like they're going to be more prone to attacks or takeover?
Yeah. I mean, yes. Short answer. Yeah, I do. You know, we're talking about the tier one, tier two, you know, like imagine now if you're Uber or Lyft, not only do you have to worry about all of the bugs that are from the manufacturer on down, but now you don't even control any of that. You have, you're right. So far outside of the system. If you're Lyft, you know, if you're Uber, you don't get access. Like if you ask GM, hey, can I have access to all this information? They're like, who, what? No, why? We can't give you that. Like you're not us. Like we're trying to make, like GM owns Cruise, right? So they're trying to make their own taxi system, right? They're direct competitors in a way. There's potentially, what's interesting, there's I smell a lawsuit, by the way, eventually coming, you know, like, because how come GM can make their own self-driving taxis and have all access to, they obviously have all access to all this information, and Uber and Lyft, well, we can have access to this information. We should definitely deserve it. And they have a very good case here. I assure you they do. And I'm sure there'll be some sort of litigation that'll solve that problem. But that being said, you know, should we be concerned? I mean, these cars are going to share the road with us, whether we get in them or not. We're going to have to be concerned about them. Did you see that hack that happened just a couple days ago? Uber hack in Russia, in Moscow?
No.
Really cool. All the taxis, somebody figured out a way to call hundreds of taxis to a single location that all use the Uber network. So they called a bunch of Uber taxis to a single location. Now, they just maybe compromised multiple accounts, right? Probably a password. They just like logged into 150 accounts and then had them all call a taxi to a single location. Imagine doing that same thing on Lyft and Uber, right? You know it's going to happen.
You know it's going
to
happen.
It's not even like a back-end hack, right? It's just all you have to do is hack a bunch of accounts by just logging into them, right? Like, oh, just weak passwords. Like, you know, that's just like some password list. Somebody just did some password. Like, oh, look at, I compromised 600 accounts. I'm going to make them all go to this location. And like,
yeah. And this isn't even like, you're talking about just the Uber network, not even the vehicle itself.
Days ago. I mean, this was just, this just made 2 days ago. Now do that with self-driving vehicles, right? Have them all go. Oh, wait. The president's coming into town. Oh, I have a great idea. Let's call a bunch of like Ubers and keep them, you know, like gridlock the streets. Like, what are you going to do, right?
Uber botnet.
That's exactly what it is. So I'm just saying, like, it's not even Uber. Like, how does, like, a security engineer at Uber, how do they even, right? Like, I mean, you got to make sure everybody's password is so secure it can't be hacked. Nobody has a solution for that, right? So you can imagine the challenges related to not only securing the car, but securing the backend network are just extra challenging now, because now these are autonomous vehicles. There's no logic. Like, humans are susceptible to this. These are all human drivers that got called to one location, didn't realize, hey, this is probably fake. Like, these cars are definitely not going to realize this is fake at all. You know, and they're going to go. And maybe their backend systems and notification network will, now that this has happened once, they'll be able to, like, hey, look at, somebody's like calling, like 150 people, 200 people are calling for a taxi in this one location that's fake. You know, we can fix it. You know, they'll survive this next attack that's similar to that, but who knows what the one after that is. And that's not even hacking the cars, right? So yeah, we're a long ways away from even doing it, even with real cars from doing it. So it'll be interesting to see how that works.
You know, we think about these vehicle vulnerabilities, right? And the potential for an attacker to exploit them. But I'm curious, you know, what is the actual risk to drivers on the road that, you know, an attacker could just pull up next to you on the highway and pull off some type of an attack on your vehicle. Like, how realistic is that to happen?
I personally am not super concerned about it. Probably because I don't know something that other people might, but the challenge is, and this actually, one of my favorite takeaways from the GPAC itself, one of the things that they said, I forgot who said it, was Chris or Charlie, but they said, you know, it was harder to attack one vehicle than it was to attack all of them, right? So, like, to attack one vehicle means you have to figure out that, like, you could, like, you've owned the entire backend infrastructure, you know everything about all of that, and you can, like, simply command them all to do one action, shut down, open up, you know. But to figure out where one vehicle was on the map required extra effort. So in that situation, it's not, like, insurmountable, like, but you have to know, like, how are you going to differentiate this one vehicle? Like, you got the backend system. How do you know what its unique identifier is from the backend perspective? You know, it just says, hey, it's a silver Jeep. Okay, I know this is a silver Jeep, but there's 8,000 other silver Jeeps in this state. Like, which one is it? You know, so to attack one particular vehicle sometimes is more challenging if you have access to the backend system than it is if you can, like, pivot onto their network remotely. Manufacturers just aren't engineering a method, so there's just no, like, conduit in which you can just talk to a single vehicle while right next to it, right? Like, there's Bluetooth, you might be able to unlock the doors, but there's no Bluetooth that lets you turn the steering wheel. Like, the steering wheel conduit to the world was via the internet, so that means you have to, like, it doesn't matter that you're driving next to it or you're 10,000 miles away from it. You can it's just as close, right? So you got to know, when if you're driving next to a vehicle, what's the vehicle identification number of that vehicle while you're driving 55 miles an hour down the road.
Yeah.
It's
unrealistic.
It's super challenging. Not impossible. Maybe you can figure out, like, how to do a particular flash pattern of the taillights and, you know, all the gray ones, all right, flash them like this for this period of time. And when it's its turn, you know, hey, I was flashing these five and now I know it was this one. Sure, that's one way to do it. There's some creative methods that you could do, but, you know, who's going to make that extra effort? Somebody really wants you dead. You know, guns work. You know, you know. I don't know to what extent you expect people to go after you, but, you know, if you're that valuable, cool, man. Now just turn the vehicle off. I don't know. Just hit the put it in neutral. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can still put the car in neutral. There's still a mechanical linkage to put the car in neutral on most vehicles. Some vehicles are.
I mean, that would make a cool movie, though.
Yeah. Well, talk to Alyssa Knight. She's working on them. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
But I am. Yeah.
She was some pretty cool, like, car, like, hacking stuff. And she was our keynote last year at the Car Hacking Village. So she's been doing some car hacking for sure. So her and I have been involved in some projects in the past. So she's definitely the right person.
Cool, man.
To make that movie. Yeah. Just to ask, you know, like, or you should, working on it. I don't know.
I would love to do it, but not as a, like, a movie, but more as a documentary. Like,
oh yeah.
Like Mythbusters. Like,
yeah.
Can you actually do this?
Can you do it? Yeah.
Yeah.
The truth is if I could do it, I certainly wouldn't want to talk about it. Like, for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, I hate to say it, like, it's tough because we could talk about it in like, here's this manufacturer and here's how bad they are. Don't get them. Well, first of all, of course, you're going to get sued. I mean, that's just going to happen. But secondly, they can't fix it. That's the problem with car hacking right now, is they can't fix it. Unless it's a Tesla, there's no mechanism which they're going to ever distribute a patch for this. There's no patch today on cars, right? Yeah. That's why I drive a Tesla. It really is, because they can patch it. And that's until manufacturers can patch their cars and fix their updates, it's really, really challenging. Or just make sure it doesn't connect to the internet, please. That's it. If you minimum requirement, if you connect that thing to the internet, you must be able to update it over the air, period. You could drive a newer vehicle that doesn't connect to the internet, though, or remove the internet from the vehicle. I mean, that's
okay.
Or turn off the internet. Like, literally, like I said, we're testing these things. If you say, I don't want this service on, they disable it in the vehicle and it doesn't make a connection. So okay. That could save you as well. I mean, I don't really think a lot of these backend systems can do too much, especially on vehicles that don't, you know, don't have any drivability or anything like that. Like, you don't have to worry about it in that sense, you know. But they can get, if they can do it over the, if it's connected to the internet, you don't know what kind of hacker like features they could, like a hacker could add to make your car a little bit less drivable or more interesting for them. So you got to be careful there. So over the air updates are huge for me.
Well, you just justified my Tesla purchase.
I'm telling you, like all of the new manufacturers, electronic manufacturers, Rivian does over the air updates, and you know, they didn't do it for cybersecurity reasons. That wasn't the reason why they did it. They did it because they were releasing a product that was half done and they needed to fix it in the field. But man, it does save them a lot of time and effort, like later, you know. I was just talking to somebody who bought a Rivian the other day, and he was like, you know, my car, the problem with the Rivian is the electronic systems never shut off and go to sleep, right? So that means the battery's constantly being discharged. And I was telling him, like, when I got my Tesla, that same thing, that's exactly how it worked. Now it doesn't work like that anymore. They fixed that. So I think about it from, I do a lot of like forward engineering, not just reverse engineering stuff, but I do a lot of forward engineering. And that's one of the last things we add to systems is for them to go to sleep and use less battery. So power management is really one of the more challenging things to do. And it's one of the last things you add, because you really have to have a very stable system. Because if you have an unstable system, it's not a problem for it to go to sleep. But if you have an unstable system, it doesn't wake up. And that is very, very bad for power management. And so I was like, that's what's happening. You know, wait a few years, but yeah, it's going to be years. They'll eventually go to sleep and you won't have to worry about it anymore. But it's going to take a while for sure. So,
gotcha. So if someone's listening to this and they're interested in learning car hacking,
yes,
where can they go to learn about car hacking? Is that something that you offer, or where would you point them?
So I did a course with advanced security training, that is a car hacking training, and we built a really, really cool online virtual car. So the number one problem I get with people who want to get into this space is, hey, I don't want to hack my own car, right? I don't want to break it. And I laugh initially because I was like, why would you break your car? Like, don't do that. Just don't do that. And one of the things I tell people is, like, if you want to do the car hacking, you better be able to not just break your car, because you'll break it a lot. You need to be able to fix it. So you have to have that adventurous spirit of fixing it. So, and like a lot of people, it's their only car. And so, like, you know, I spent, you know, a significant portion of my money on this thing. I don't want to hurt it. And I was like, well, does your neighbor have a car? Maybe they'll let you borrow it, you know, but you know, that's always a joke. I mean, obviously there is a whole car rental market, but you know, you're not allowed to hack those cars. So don't do that. I would never recommend that. I'm totally against that. That being said, that was the big challenge, is like, hey, we don't, like, cars are expensive. We can't just hack them. So we built a online virtual car. We call it our cloud car. We released it during DEF CON, so it's pretty brand new. Come to me, find me on the Twitter. If they don't know me, I answered the Car Hacking Village tweets or direct messages. So at Car Hack Village, or you can find me personally at Car Foo Car, Car Fucker, and on the Twitter, CARFUCAR. And just DM me and I'll send you a link, an invite to the cloud car. It's currently very much beta, so we're just letting people test it and use it. But once it goes non-beta, you know, we're going to have a small service fee. But I assure you, it's a lot cheaper than, you know, buying a car. So if you're interested in getting into this space, we have a training module and a virtual car for you to use. So you don't have to do it on your own yet. Eventually, I expect you to, you know, graduate at least to your neighbor's car.
Now, this is through Car Hacking Village?
So, Car Hacking Village is through my own company, CAN Bus Hack.
Okay.
So, that CAN Bus Hack owns the cloud car.
And what's the website to CAN Bus Hack?
Cloudcar.canbushack.com.
Got it. And then tell me about Pivot.
So, the concept of that company, which we actually never really took off with, so I just put it back into CAN Bus Hack, because CAN Bus Hack was just like, hey, we're just going to hack cars. Pivot was like, hey, we're going to provide services with the data that we hack the cars with. And so that's really what it was. So it's just It's really just Canvas Hack now. It's all put back into one company. And, you know, we just wanted to have a way to provide services as well with the data. So with Canvas Hack now, we have what we call HAPI. It's our API for companies who are looking to, decode the data that's on vehicles. Like, if you want to know what data is on your vehicle and you want to make a product based off of that information, you can stream the data back to our servers and we'll decode it for you, essentially.
Gotcha. All right, so I'm going to downshift. My bartender is over there.
Yeah.
Pointing at his watch. So Robert, you're located in the epicenter of the automotive industry, Detroit.
Yeah, my office is in Pontiac, a defunct car company. So
really?
It's Pontiac. Well, Pontiac was owned by GM and then they canceled Pontiac, but Pontiac, the city still lives on,
Nice.
We have an office in Pontiac. That's correct.
If you hacked a car and programmed it to drive to your favorite bar in Detroit, what bar would that be?
My favorite bar in Detroit. Well, like I said, I'm sort of outside of Detroit. Favorite bar. My favorite bar is my office. We have all the drinks you could possibly manage. We have a full stocked bar. We've got, a beer fridge. I have just a fridge just in its all by itself. It's just stocked full of beer. We've got a full, like about 20 different liquors that we can make and a mix kit and everything. So
nice.
Like my favorite bar is our office. Like as far as like driving to one, where could I have it drive me?
Okay. Let's say outside of Detroit, outside of where you are.
Bar.
You travel, right? So have you been to any unique bars like during any of your travels?
Oh man, so many. I'm so bad with names. I'd have to like open up my Google Maps and tell you like my favorite bar. Let's say, I'm trying to think, like Vegas, obviously we get out to Vegas a lot, so the really cool speakeasy in the Luxor that Black Hat always puts it's like between the Luxor and the Mandalay Bay, it's like right in that like area, but.
The Prohibition Bar.
Yeah, you know what, it's a really, really good one? Yeah, Prohibition. My favorite, you know what? Scratch that. The best bar in the world that I travel to. And it's perfect for hackers, is the Anonymous Bar in Prague, Czech Republic. It's called Anonymous Bar. It's the coolest. First of all, you have to bring a black light if you want to read some parts of the menu. Certain drinks are only available if you have their black light and you can shine it on the menu because they're hidden. And it's like a hacker's bar. It's like for hackers, by hackers, called Anonymous, and it's the Anonymous Bar. And the first time I met Dual Core was we were hanging out. Like he was in Prague and I was in Prague. I noticed that. I was like, what are you doing? Like, we got to go to this bar called Anonymous. And that's where I first met him. And so our N80 from Dual Core. And I was just like, oh my God, it is the perfect place to meet somebody, another hacker as well. So yeah, the Anonymous Bar in Prague. If there's one that I have to recommend on on barcode, definitely the one. So
it's probably one of the better ones I've seen.
They're doing really cool drinks and like making them at the table, like in front of the table. Like one of the drinks, they have two pots, like mix it with two pots. I don't know, in front of you, like they're shooting this like liquors and between two pots. I don't know. It's just like, what is going on? And they light it on fire, and I don't know. It's really cool. And a phenomenal place, really cool atmosphere. And I'm sure there's a bunch of like hidden things you can do. Like it's like almost like a spy museum, which I've been to, a really cool spy museum or not spy bar, speakeasy.
Yeah. I think it's in DC, right?
There's one in DC. Was it in DC? What conference was that? That was, I don't remember, man. I've been to a lot of really cool bars, but
this menu for Anonymous. I mean, you got, there's drinks called the St. Mary's Virus.
Yep.
You got Message.
Yep.
V's Blood, I assume V for Vendetta.
Yeah, V for Vendetta. Obviously, there's a lot of that going on. The Guy Fawkes mask. It's really cool. It's like legit. You got to go. It's like, first of all, Prague is a phenomenal city, beautiful, awesome city. And to just visit that bar, I just can't not recommend that bar for sure if I'm talking about barcodes. So, yeah, that's the one.
Cool, man. Well, listen, I just heard last call here. Do you have time for one more?
Yeah, sure. Great.
All right. If you decided to open a cybersecurity or Car Hacking Bar.
Yeah.
What would the name be? And what would your signature drink be called?
Oh, man, I'm not that creative. I guess you definitely should call it Hackers Anonymous. You know, like we go back to the anonymous, but I like the like, hey, you know, like we're a group of people who used to be really hackers, but we gotta get away from that and drink instead. And my favorite drink, I'm a huge Manhattan fan, so maybe like the Canhattan. Oh, that's it. Oh, I'm such a pun, such a bad pun. The Canhattan.
Dude, I don't think there's anything better than that.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. That's mine. I own it. I did make my own drink, though. If you ever want the worst drink you could possibly ever have, but to make it better, and I'm not joking on this, I hate Fireball, but I had a boss that he would only let me drink Fireball out when we were in Vegas. So we'd have to start the day off with Fireball shots, and I hated it. So I accidentally grabbed orange pop, like an orange soda.
Yeah.
Like drank the orange soda and like chased it. I'm like, well, that wasn't so bad. I'm like, what happens if you mix them? And I mixed orange soda and Fireball and it's phenomenal. It's so good. You want to drink it again and again. I call it, you know, so my last name is Lee Alley. So it's the Lee Alley. So if you ever want to make a Lee Alley, that's it. Just it's two ingredients, equal parts. It's equal. It's one ounce of Fireball and 1 ounce of orange soda. Just Faygo or Sunkist. It doesn't matter. Just something orangey, super orangey. And it just, for whatever reason, it gets rid of all the bad and just keeps the good of the Fireball. It's not much good left, but fortunately you got the orange soda to go with it. So it's pretty fun. But,
dude, so it's two ingredients. It's not a lot of work.
And it's like it's perfect me because I don't know how to do any of this stuff. I could, if once you add three or four things to my brain, I lose the fourth thing, right? I couldn't do it. If you give me ice, orange soda, and Fireball, I can make that. Anything past that, my brain just couldn't possibly store it. So it doesn't have the memory for it.
Dude, you might be onto something, man.
That's not bad.
You are a true mixologist.
Yeah, I guess
that. Whether you know it or not.
I hope not. Jeez, I've seen real mixologists. Don't ever equate me with those people. They're great. They're phenomenal.
But. Well, one thing I wanted to tell you, man, whoever did the logo for Car Hacking Village, man, yeah. That logo is pretty sick.
Isn't it cool? Yeah, we had, so remember Kirsten helped us out with, she worked for a company called Novetta at the time. And Novetta since been acquired, but one of her coworkers was really, really, really awesome and made it. Like we saw like he, that was the one, like he was going to give us a bunch of proofs. I think that was the second of them. Like we had one like minor correction on something that was like technically wrong on it, but okay. Otherwise it was just, he knocked out of the park on the first one. We were like, okay, his name is Scully, by the way.
Oh, nice. Yeah, okay. Scully, yeah. And that's has a skull on it. Yeah. All right, Robert. Well, thanks again for stopping by. I really appreciate the knowledge and sharing what you're doing right now and sort of helping us all understand what car hacking is and what it consists of, where you can point people to learn it. And I know you mentioned your Twitter handle. Is that where you would suggest, you know, our listeners reach out to you?
Yeah, it's probably the easiest way. I constantly monitor my Twitter. So yeah, I'm probably on Twitter way too much. So it's a perfect place.
All right, cool, man. Well, thanks again. Take care. Be safe getting home.
Thanks.
As you know, Barcode is where security and IT professionals hang out after a long day. So, get your message front and center to our fans by sponsoring an episode. Learn more at thebarcodepodcast.com/sponsor. Cheers.
Unfortunately, it's time to shut the bar down for this episode. Thanks for stopping in. See you next time. We'll save you a seat. Be sure to check us out at thebarcodepodcast.com.